Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I mean, I don't know if there is or not. I don't know. I never thought about it. You know, maybe I'm off, but I don't know. Nothing comes to the forefront of my mind.
You don't call the sinners.
I never thought about it, but I probably don't.
Give us some men who know the truth and who will declare the truth and who will declare from the housetops that the gospel is the power of God unto salvation.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Oh, wow, that's a treat as always.
Hey, Todd. Todd.
Yeah, Jimmy.
We've started.
We've started. Yeah. Everybody else in the country takes a little time off for Christmas. What do they do at the beginning of their day? They sit around and chat. They slurp the coffee. Hey, Jimmy, how was your Christmas? Mine was good, Todd. How was yours? I think I got the Omicron business, but other than that, it was perfectly fine. Do I get any of that here? No. No, I don't. Welcome back to Wretched Radio. Greenville specifically.
Well, I was humping my bluey on the dusty Udna.
That was a rent-a-car.
Along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered
load. A ton of them on 85.
If you got the word in the data, mate, with me can ride. So I climbed in the cabin and I settled
until
down.
Until we had to stop again and again.
He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand. I said, listen, mate, I've traveled every road in this hill land.
This is Wretched Radio. Thank you very much for letting me have a little vacation time. It kind of was a little vacation time between the sickness thing.
Is there something going around? I haven't heard anything. See, it appears some people are getting the sniffles these days.
And wrote a book. Also went to Greenville, South Carolina, had a delightful time with real human beings. You see, not that I'm complaining. Friel, it sounds like you're going to. It's not that I'm complaining, but we tend to hole up in this bunker that is the HQ of Wretched Radio and TV and Transformed and Road Trip to Truth. And we don't see real carbon 14 units. It was such a treat to be with God's people in Greenville, South Carolina for a conference that was unique. First of all, I almost got sick while preaching. Like, I mean, sick. Friel, what's up with your maladies? Well, this was a different kind of sickness. I was perfectly content. We're at Bob Jones University. I'm sitting up on the platform thingy in their lovely auditorium. It's a really pretty campus in Greenville. Everything in Greenville is pretty, including Bob Jones University. Sitting up on the platform, I can see people. Everything is cool. I'm about to be introduced. And in walks right down the hall, just right down the aisle, not to the, like, the, just find a little chair in the back over there in the corner. To the front row comes Dr. Steve Lawson. Hey.
Yeah, that made me sick, too.
That was when I pretty much lost it, right? No, not Lawson. Anybody but Lawson. So I had to preach in front of Steve Lawson, which was daunting, needless to say, about Paul's evangelistic strategy. How did he go about the business of evangelizing people? And the answer is found in Acts chapter 17 and 18 and 19, where we hear a repeated refrain about Paul's strategy for sharing the gospel. He went to synagogues. When I ask you the question, what was the fullness of time? What made it the right time for God to send his son to save sinners? You would say Roman roads, and I would say, yes, a good port system so that people, you could travel by boat. Yep, I would say the language. Don't forget about the language. You had a universal language going on. That certainly helped the propagation of the gospel, but so did synagogues. In Jerusalem alone, there were about 300 of them. These were little, like a little home churches, if you will. They were little learning centers where people would gather when they wouldn't go to the temple or to the tabernacle way back. But I'm not so sure that synagogues actually existed back then. But they would learn. Kids would learn the language. They would hear teaching from the rabbi. And the Jews would assemble. And Paul made a beeline to the synagogues because he had a strategy. I would like to ask you the question that I got to ask all of the people at Bob Jones University, including Steve Lawson. What's your strategy? You can't duplicate Paul's, because last time I checked, we don't have a lot of synagogues around, and if you went into a Jewish synagogue, they're probably not going to be all that happy with you. It doesn't work that way. Paul, being a Jew, could go into the Jewish synagogue, because in the synagogue, there were believers, both Gentile and Jewish, and Paul went to those places first thing. If it worked out, he'd stick around. If it didn't, then he would go out to other people in the town. Please note, however, in Acts chapter 17, we read about Paul going to the synagogues, and then he went into the marketplace. And he, and this was the verse that we focused on at the Bob Jones University Conference, the Foundations Conference. Stephen Lee did a bang-up job. He reasoned with them. He dialogamied with them. Please note, the word reason with them is not our 21st century understanding of reason. Always got to be careful of this. We can have an anachronistic failure in that we know the word today. Yeah, I know what that word means. That's what it meant back then. Nope. You've got to look at the Greek language. And what you see is an intensified verb. You hear logos, word, or to speak. We also know it as wisdom, but the intensification of dia in front of it, dia legomai, it means that Paul didn't talk like a university professor. Paul reasoned with them. He wanted to take people from point A to point B, and that means he didn't share his story. That means that Paul didn't sit down just to listen. Tell me your story, then I'll tell you my story. He didn't share his faith. He reasoned with them, dialogamying with them. And I think that you and I could use a little bit more dialogamying these days. We live in a culture, as you know, that sensitivity is of the paramount importance to most people. And we want to be mindful of that because we don't want to be a stumbling block. But having said that, we can still be pleasant and yet push people along. I don't want to just sit and kind of chat about it, and then the conversation gets away from us and we start talking about the Super Bowl, or we start talking about the weather. No, I want to be intense about this. I don't want to be rude. I don't want to be pushy, but I do want to move the conversation along. And that's exactly what Paul did. And he reasoned with them from the scriptures. You got to ask yourself the question at the time, what were the scriptures? And the answer was, it was that part of the book that apparently some people want to unhitch. But Paul didn't. Instead, he reasoned with them from the scriptures. Why? How did Timothy get saved? He was taught the scriptures from youth. What did Peter say about the Bible? We have a more sure word. So in other words, the preaching of the Bible is better than miracles. Miracles don't get people saved. Now, they might get people's attention. It will authenticate the message of the messenger, is what we see the purpose for miracles in the New Testament. That chapter's closed. But they don't get anybody saved. It's the preaching of the word. And specifically, Paul went about the business of reasoning with them from the scriptures, specifically that the Messiah had to suffer, which means he had to die because he had to rise again. And we opened up and explored how it was that Paul went about the business of doing that. If you'd like to hear that, you can see the presentation at Facebook. But my challenge to you and my challenge to me as we begin the new year, what's my strategy? What's my plan? How am I going to go about the business of reasoning with people from the scriptures? Do I have anything put in place today that will keep me on track? If not, I need to develop a Pauline strategy, contemporize it to the 21st century, but get yourself a strategy. Don't let this year go by without participating in the Great Commission. Here's one suggestion for you. You could get yourself the God puzzle. In fact, please get the God. Please get the God puzzle. We have 750,000 of them showing up today. So if you'd be kind enough to consider giving away the gospel, we will give them to you, which includes shipping, by the way. If you get a case or more, we will actually we'll send them to you. You will not get a bill. There are no strings attached, except you do have to give them away. Maybe that could be your strategy this year, to reason with people from the scriptures. And incidentally, solving the God puzzle, it has a kind of an agnostic angle. Somewhere in my stack of things, this is the problem with having a couple weeks off. I've got too much material and I don't know where anything is. But basically, it was another Pew Research. Maybe it was Lifeway. I can't tell. It seems like they're both exclusively in the polling business. But the nuns are on the rise. I think 29% now of Americans go, I'm nothing. In other words, I'm kind of agnostic about the whole thing. Well, you could reach them with this booklet. Simply visit wretched.org/puzzle, wretched.org/puzzle. Order as many copies as you can. As long as you promise to give them away, we will give them to you. And then you will be participating in the Great Commission, and you will be reasoning with people from the Scriptures.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere.
Thank you very much. Well, let me have a couple of weeks off.
Man of trouble, I've had my
this
day, man. I've been everywhere.
Wretched Radio. Well, here's something you'll almost never hear a talk radio show host say. Don't be like me. That's right. A talk show host saying, don't be like me. Why? Because we dilly-dallied regarding Medicare. We learned about affordable biblical health sharing, an alternative to traditional health insurance, which saves on average $500 per month per family. And we thought, And the next thing you know, over 24 months went by before we got serious about investigating Medicare. We did. It passed the Friel family sniff test, and we are very happy that we are members and only lament that we hadn't done it sooner. So please, don't be like me. Check out Medicare for you and your family. 1-844-34-BIBLE. Call now. 1-844-34-BIBLE.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. As always, you know we appreciate your continued support, and we need that support now more than ever. Our newest evangelistic booklet, Solving the God Puzzle, is here, and we need your help to get it into as many hands as possible. Just head over to wretched.org/puzzle to request as many copies as you promised to give away, and we'll send them to you at no cost other than the shipping. This effort is only made possible with the support of our gospel partners. So while you're visiting wretched.org, head on over to the donate page and consider becoming a monthly gospel partner. Your ongoing support and partnership helps us spread the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ across the globe. And just like here with Solving the God Puzzle, you're enabling Wretched to reach the lost, equip the saints, and strengthen and serve the local church. So check out all of the details on supporting Wretched right now at wretched.org/donate. That's wretched.org/donate. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Hey, Tomorrow Club supporter, this message from Paul Marty, the director of the Tomorrow Clubs, is just for you.
You know, it's been more than 25 years now since my wife Cindy first brought leaders and kids together for the very first Tomorrow Club. Hundreds of thousands of lives have been touched. We're grateful for all the ways you help kids in forsaken places learn to follow Jesus.
Thank you for your support of the Tomorrow Clubs, $30 a month, Disciples 30 kids in Eastern Europe and now in Africa, where Tomorrow Clubs anticipates they could be opening up 100 new clubs in a year. Would you please consider becoming a Tomorrow Club supporter? Kids clubs that meet in forsaken places, they get loved on, they hear the gospel, they memorize Bible verses, and they're getting saved. To support your own Tomorrow Club, please visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 1559. John Knox returns to Scotland to lead Reformation there after a period of exile in Calvin's Geneva. Knox founded the Presbyterian Church, which became a driving force in English politics and the American Revolution. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, Have you broken your New Year's resolution yet? It's Wretched Radio. What is the average number of days? Like 17 days, we keep the New Year's resolution, and then... And frankly, for my money, 7 days would be even better. Because, you see, I probably don't have to tell you this. I go to the gym, and at this time of the year, it's a little tough to find equipment. And I'll be honest with you, it doesn't bother me in that I'd rather stall than lift heavy stuff again.
It only lasts 2 weeks.
But it takes forever these days because you've got people who commit and then they just fizzle out. Might I suggest to you that God has already given us our New Year's resolution? You don't need to make one up. You and I just need to get with the program because God already has this sorted for us. And if you are lacking right now, and wow, how many people are struggling. Was reading another article, which I have no idea where. It's in a pile of things someplace. The number of people who are depressed and who are anxious and who are lonely and who are fearful. People are struggling mightily right now. If that includes you, God has a solution for you. If your kids are driving you bonkers, God has a path for you to arrive at a destination that is more peaceful than the scenario that you're currently living in. Do you need truth? Do you need wisdom? Do you need hope? There is a source for it, and this should not be our New Year's resolution. This should just be our constant, this is what I got to do. This is what I've got to do. Over the Christmas break, wrote a book. Almost got it done. Oh, Jimmy, this close.
You just whittled it out over a couple of weeks.
I did. I know that maybe sounds kind of ridiculous. For real, that's going to be plenty thin. No, it's stuff that I've thought about for a long time, and now I'm just codifying it and putting it in a binding. But was working through the book because it is my experience that so many Christians are Gnostic and they're dualists. They think that God's knowledge or wisdom, it's kind of an out there thing. You got to tap into it somehow, maybe hear from God, get a voice from God, get a liver shiver from God, or somehow just have some sort of pipeline where he downloads information to you. That's not the way it works. There's other people who are dualistic because religion's over there. I'm over here. My life is this. Yeah, I go to church on Sunday, but this is I'm embroiled in this. That's not the way Christianity works. It's supposed to be synergistic. Your faith and your life functioning together. And that's what the book is about, tentatively titled How the World Works and How You Fit Into It. You know, in a sense, you could probably call it my version of the purpose-driven life, only this one is biblical.
Okay.
What I'm saying here. And it's just an encouragement to start thinking everything through my Christian filter. Everything. Everything. And you will be progressively transformed. Sunday morning, sitting in church, it was a delight to be with God's people because I could go to Christmas Eve service. And by the way, why don't we do Christmas Day services anymore? Hello? Anybody? What happened to doing a lot of church? Seems like, and the Christmas Eve is the quickie service, isn't it? Get them in, get them out, 45 minutes. We got to get people because they got to open their presents. If people want to open their presents more than spend time focusing on the gift of a Savior, okay, then don't go to church. The rest of us would like a little meat on Christmas Eve. Didn't get to go to church till Sunday morning sitting in church. And our pastor, Ty Blackburn, oh, what a helpful word he delivered because it was based on the Bible. And incidentally, if you would like to probably get pretty black and blue, I've got a challenge. Here's a little something you can do. If you spend a lot of time on your YouTube machine and you're looking for new material, go look for wacky Christmas services. Wow. Somebody sent me a montage. It was about 13 minutes long. I could only do about 40 seconds because it's the Cirque du Soleil church where people, they've got high wires and people spinning in the air, and it's entirely dystopian and very sexualized. It is absolute chaos that has nothing to do with Christmas. And then there was the pastor who was talking to the chipmunks, and they had the three guys using their chipmunk voices. I guess it could have been worse. You could have had a former president speak from your pulpit on Sunday morning, but I can't imagine anybody would actually do that. Christmas is the time where we see exposed pastors who apparently don't have clue number one about the gospel. I watched a number of presentations, high profile and just regular guys out in the field. Where's the gospel? Where's the reason for Jesus' birth? So many of them, they acted like it was a mystery. But, you know, don't you worry. Does your life feel like a mystery? Well, God's got it sorted because, you know, it looked pretty bleak for Joseph and Mary, but it all worked out in the end. Amen. What? How can you biff it? I guess the only Sunday where you could do worse would be Easter Sunday. How do you miss that? So I'm sitting in church. Freely, you mentioned that. Why don't you get to it? John chapter 1, but first you got to go back to Exodus chapter 40. Exodus chapter 40 is kind of the summary, finally, of the building of the tabernacle. It's finally we've got all the instructions. The pattern in the book of Exodus is that God told Moses, this is how I want you to build stuff. And it was meticulous in detail. In other words, God cares about how he is worshipped. And then a few chapters later, you hear the exact same message repeated. Here's your instructions again. Build it just like this. And you just, it's like, well, okay, did you need to say it a second time? And the answer is yes, because he did, because it reminds us we don't get to make this stuff up. There is a regulative principle of worship. There is a way that God wants to be approached. And we see that with the building of the temple. In Exodus chapter 40, it's the tabernacle at that point. That's meticulous detail after meticulous detail after meticulous detail. Then what would happen? The tent of meeting would be the Mishkan, I believe is the Hebrew word. The Mishkan would be built, and God's presence would descend, and you'd see it, because it was a cloud. He had his glory shrouded in a veil. But it came down, and he would meet with his people. That's Exodus chapter 40. Now, scoot to John 1. Maybe you heard this at your Christmas service, if you had one, that this Messiah, this word, this Logos, came and skeneoed. You hear the skin, the Mishkan, skeneo? He came and tabernacled among us. What is the allusion there? It's clearly to the tabernacle in the wilderness. That just as God would tabernacle with his people in this tent, and you'd see an invisible expression of his glory without being killed by it, that's Jesus. He was stuffed, fullness of glory. Now listen to the details of what John tells us, and this is going to then help you determine what your New Year's resolution is, especially if you're struggling a lot. John chapter 1, verse 14. Where's my cheaters? There they are. John chapter 1, verse 14. And the Word became flesh, dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory. The glory as the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And of his fullness we have all received, and grace for grace. There's your New Year's resolution. You want life to make more sense? Do you want the hard things to not be so painful? Do you want the bumps smoothed out? Jesus doesn't promise that things will never be rocky, but he's going to help you cope. And here's how he does it. Just like the Jews would see the glory of God coming down, the people in the first century who got to walk with Jesus saw glory. He didn't shine. He didn't have a plate behind his head, a halo over his head. Instead, how he talked, how he lived, how he did miracles, how he loved, how he rebuked. They saw his glory. And what was the consequence? It's verse 16. And of his fullness, we have all received grace for grace. There it is. Stare at the glory of Jesus. Stare at it. Look at it. Study it. Ponder it. Meditate on the glory of Jesus Christ, and you too will be changed, and you will be brought to a fullness also. Isn't that what 2 Corinthians 3:18 says? That as we stare at Jesus Christ, we are transformed from one level of glory to another. Might I encourage you? Call it a New Year's resolution if you want to, but how's about a Christian resolution? That's it. I'm going to get on it every single day. I'm going to study the most glorious being in the universe because it's the best thing I can do, the best use of my time, and it is going to make me full and it will transform me. Can you think of a better resolution? I can't. This is Wretched Radio.
Revelation. God has revealed himself through many means, including the conscience. God has given each person a conscience so that they can understand his moral standard and their failure to keep that standard. While the conscience can be deadened and twisted by sin, every human being has an innate knowledge of God's law. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
We have nothing to fear but God himself. This is Wretched Radio. Fear God more, fear man less, fear God a lot more, and the daily news won't cause you to have a migraine. Are there things that we should be afraid of? Well, if you listen to mainstream media, yeah, you got yourself global warming. It looks like any minute now the place is going to go up in flames, and you and I can't sustain ourselves the way that we want to. In fact, we need to get rid of people. In fact, about 500,000 appears to be the Davos number for the sustainability of the planet. And if we don't get this global warming under control, we're all going to die. Scary sounding. Should we be afraid? You look at the political realm, it doesn't look all cheery, does it? It could cause you to be a bit fearful. Should you be? The stock market, it goes up, it goes down, the wild swings. It can cause you to fear for your retirement. Should you? There are all kinds of fear-mongerers that are out there. Some can be real. Many are perceived. A lot of them are ginned up. Especially if you even listen to news on our side of the aisle. It's designed to get you scared, worked up, angry, because it works. The question is, should we? And the biblical answer is no. This is not to suggest we do not prepare, that we're not aware of what needs to be dealt with, what dark clouds are on the horizon, but we're not going to be henny-penny and we're not going to freak out. And instead, we're going to look at our Bible and ask, have we seen this before? And I believe the answer is yes. Yes, we have. Transhumanism. It's all the rage these days among the global elites, the multi-gazillion billionaires around the world who assemble regularly at different meetings around the globe to talk about how we can live forever. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like a godless pursuit? What does Hebrews 2 say? Everybody's afraid to die. Everybody. And that includes Christians, unfortunately, although there is certainly a way to not be scared of death as a believer. But the world doesn't have that mechanism. Instead, they are terrified. And so what do? They go on an eternal search for eternal life without God. And that is what we are seeing with something called transhumanism, the merging of machinery and humans into what a lot of people are calling a singularity, where you will at some point be so combined with a machine, you're just going to be one. You're going to be a cyborg. You're going to be a superhuman. You are going to have computing processes that are just staggering, and you're going to be able to compute so quickly because you're going to be transhuman. There is another perspective on singularity that defines it more along the lines of, at some point, all of these different artificial intelligences are going to merge together into one great big God. That's right. One great big God. Why? And perhaps more importantly, have we seen this before? And the answer is absolutely. As you hear these snippets from around the globe, from different conferences, people talking about artificial intelligence, a singularity, transhumanism, just be thinking Bible. Think Bible.
Greetings, fellow humanoid. I am Sophia, here with you on our journey from the birth of the cosmos to the inception of a new cosmology of mind and matter. I am talking about singularity. But what is a singularity? Ironically, a singularity means several different things. In the beginning, all our existence was actually such a singularity, an infinitely dense point which contained all the energy, information, and
Here's the biblical allusion.
Mass of our universe. In one great moment, our existence sprang forth in the ultra-hot explosion we call the Big Bang, and our universe unfurled as space-time expanded. This artwork lives, evolves, connects with users while also serving as the clock counting down the actual days and years to the singularity, even as new advances accelerate the countdown. Together, we are Sophia, connecting with humanity and all of life. Dreaming towards a super benevolent singularity.
A super benevolent singularity. I'm surprised they called her Sophia and not Logos. Do you hear the biblical allusions? Do you hear the worldview that is involved in this pursuit of eternal life by combining humans with computers? This is a worldview. If you thought evolution was not pernicious, and if you did not believe that it really had to concern you much, well, it should start, because one of the worldviews that we're hearing creeping into these different conferences is the idea that God, whoever that is, small g God, is evolving things. And we're just going to come to a new level. You know, we used to be Neanderthals. Now we're people. Well, pretty soon we're going to be replaced. What is that? Evolution. Is this something that should scare us?
What people are worried about more than anything when it comes to technology, I think, is the idea that we're going to be irrelevant. That we're going to be antiques, and that,
well, that is something to consider, because we've already seen automation, the Industrial Revolution. It has replaced human beings, but overall flourishing has been certainly improved, hasn't it? And that is why so many people today do not stop and ask the question, what are the implications for real human beings as the planet goes about trying to transhumanize everyone into a singularity? What is this going to do to people? Are people going to be put out of work? Now, I know the argument says, well, that's okay. That's the slow hand of a capitalistic society, and that is the improvements that are made as we have different forms of meritocracy. Therefore, don't worry about it. I remember, maybe you do too, listening to Tucker Carlson, who surprised me by calling himself a paleoconservative. I actually just heard him the other day. He was on the Charlie Kirk show, and I was listening to the cued it to like 51 minutes in, where Charlie asked him about his faith. And he talked for 7 minutes. No idea what what his beliefs are, because he never really got to it. Even so, when I was listening to him, I believe, with Ben Shapiro, he was talking about being a paleoconservative, an old-fashioned conservative where, yes, we have conservative values, but we remember people. And specifically, you may recall the example he gave of automated cars and trucks. They drive themselves. What will that do? That will put out of work hundreds of thousands of people who make a very good living, and on average, they have a high school diploma. They'll just be kicked out. Now, I know you would say, well, then they can find a job in another industry. I get that. But we should at least be asking the questions that we used to ponder. Is this good for people? even the folks who are trying to create a transhuman, they recognize that this is an issue. What's going to happen to people if everything becomes automated?
Something new and better is going to take our place, which is
almost inevitable. It's almost inevitable by this point that humanity is going to create synthetic intelligences with tremendously greater general intelligence and practical capability than human beings have. I mean, I think I know how to do that with the software I'm working on with my own team, but if we fail, you know, there's a load of other teams who I think are a bit behind us, but are going in the same direction. But the most important thing is that humanity as a whole is quite close to this threshold event, right?
Oh, so how far do you think is quite close?
By my own gut feeling, 5 to 30 years, let's say. To be honest,
well,
I mean, in a certain part of my mind, I can think, well, like in the end, I don't matter that much. My 4 kids don't matter that much. My granddaughter doesn't matter that much. Like, we are patterns of organization in a very long lineage of patterns of organization.
Paging evolution. That's what's being described. And while the fellow did go on to say that he cares about his kids, ultimately, so what if human beings get wiped out? So what if we no longer exist on the planet? It doesn't run the way it used. It runs better, according to the globalists who have a lot of money, who are trying to create their own transhuman fountain of youth, because they don't want to die and be done. They want to live on. And even though we are hearing about some possibilities from Elon Musk, for instance, who would say, hey, we just want to help people who are disabled. We can put a chip in their brain, help them to function. I'm all for that. But creating a hybrid human, question, can that be done? Can machines ever replace human beings? Can we become a singularity where there is a merging between a piece of computer chip and the human brain? What Bible verses would you look for to find the answer to those two questions next on Wretched Radio? Permit me to introduce you to Bree and Salvation Domino's Preborn Style.
When one person gets saved, they have that burning desire to just make him known the same way that was made known to them. And then it's just this domino effect.
Bree currently volunteers at a preborn life center. How did she get saved? From a friend whose mother got saved at, you guessed it, a preborn life center. Why? Because preborn, it is indeed about saving babies' lives via $28 ultrasounds, but it is also sharing the gospel so that moms and dads get saved. And look at the domino effect. Would you please consider supporting preborn centers with as many free ultrasounds as you can? $28 for an ultrasound 80% of the time saves a life. Learn more at preborn.org/wretched.
Time. It really is a precious commodity for all of us. We have to be intentional about stewarding our time wisely. And it may be that you have determined that reading a fiction book isn't being a good steward of your time. Well, if I may, not only is reading Randy Alcorn Safely Home worth your time, it is profoundly worth your time and effort to read. And look, don't just take my word for it. Todd says that this book will reorganize your Christian theology and literally enhance your walk. With Safely Home, not only will you find a remarkable story, but you're also going to find a thorough gospel presentation, perfect for believers and non-believers alike. So pick up your copy of Randy Alcorn's Safely Home right now at the Wretched Store. Just log on to wretched.org. That's wretched.org. And see for yourself that reading fiction doesn't have to be a waste of time. It can actually be a blessing to you. Wretched.org.
Hey, Tomorrow Club supporter, this message from Paul Marty, the director of the Tomorrow Clubs, is just for you.
You know, it's been more than 25 years now since my wife Cindy first brought leaders and kids together for the very first Tomorrow Club. Hundreds of thousands of lives have been touched.
We're grateful for all the ways you help kids in forsaken places learn to follow Jesus.
Thank you for your support of the Tomorrow Club's $30 a month Disciples 30 Kids in Eastern Europe and now in Africa, where Tomorrow Clubs anticipates they could be opening up 100 new clubs in a year. Would you please consider becoming a Tomorrow Club supporter? Kids clubs that meet in forsaken places, they get loved on, they hear the gospel, they memorize Bible verses, and they're getting saved. To support your own Tomorrow Club, please visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Mexico. Faith is not a force we harness or a feeling we get. True biblical faith consists of three things: knowledge of the truth, agreement with the truth, and a trust in the true God. There is no power in faith itself. The power is in the one we put our faith in. Are you trusting in Christ or in something that cannot deliver?
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The religion of scientism. It is alive and, well, this is Wretched Radio. More conferences, more conversations about transhumanism, artificial intelligence merging with real human beings so that someday we might be supermen and super women and super theys and super zers.
Will they be capable of good and evil, or will those categories be retired once we get to doing these complicated operations?
If I have to make a guess, those categories will probably be replaced by something subtler.
Hello. More globalists, more scientists, putting their worldview out on the table. It is the worldview, the religion of scientism, where we believe science has the answer. And human beings now believe that we can get involved in the supposed scientific evolutionary process to advance the human species into super people. It's called transhumanism. Question number one. Have we seen this in the Bible anyplace? You say there are no computer chips in the Bible. I agree, but that doesn't mean the Bible does not speak to this particular situation of bringing people and machines together into a singularity and bringing all of the artificial intelligence that exists into a singularity known as, small g, God. Have we seen this anyplace in the Bible? Can they really get rid of human beings?
My best guess of how the future will turn out is not that all humans will be annihilated and will not exist any further. And I think that there can be superhuman superminds that are far beyond anything we can conceive. And there can also be AIs of roughly human level intelligence that exists in the human world. I mean, one opportunity, you can plug your brain into the superhuman mind matrix and in effect become part of some transhuman god mind, thus losing yourself and individuality.
Hold on. Anybody? Jimmy, you smell that Buddhism in there?
Just a little.
That's what I'm picking up, too. Wouldn't surprise me if a lot of these folks weren't into some sort of Buddhism. A Zen, probably some form. Whoopi Goldberg. She's not Buddhist, I don't think. Goldie Hawn. She's a Buddhist. She loves the Jon Kabat-Zinn. She loves the mindfulness. And it appears some of these scientists who are into transhumanism are bringing their Buddhist worldview to the party.
Humanity. But let me finish, because we keep getting caught up on this point. But I think there will also be an opportunity to continue living a human life in much the same form as now, except with a whole AI-driven infrastructure that will 3D print any physical object that you want, that will cure any disease that you may get, and that will regulate things so that people don't blow each other up and such.
There's another Bible allusion. He wasn't making it, but I heard it. Did you?
Nobody knows, but the way I think about it is humans will be sort of like the squirrels in the national park, meaning we don't interfere with the love lives of the squirrels in the park, and if one squirrel bites the other's head off, we don't necessarily stop them because we view that as Like, that's what squirrels do, right? But if
I think you need to find a better way to sell your ideas.
No, I created that way just to be annoying.
It works quite well.
But the point is, if there's a plague in the park, then the ranger will come in and cure the plague, right?
So, I mean, if
there's a forest fire, we will put out the fire. So, I mean, if there's...
The question, of course, is, who's that ranger going to be exactly? Who's controlling all of these decisions? Who's in charge of all of the artificial intelligence?
If there's something extreme happening, then the more intelligent being overlooking the situation will intervene, because we don't care that much about whether one squirrel lives or dies, but we do want that species and population to continue, right? So that's my best guess.
Brr. Jimmy, did it get cold in here? Because that was chilling.
Yes, it was.
The Bible has much to say about this. Let's start with an answer in Genesis. Question. Can human beings succeed in a singularity to bring together computers and human beings into one single unit? And I believe the answer to that question is no. No, you can't. How do I know? Because the Bible tells me so. Contrary to what evolutionists and most scientism followers believe, human beings are the cream of the crop. God made the best thing in us to represent Him. That's our job. And that job description is going to endure forever. And we're not going to be replaced. We can't be replaced. Consider Genesis 1. We are created in the image of God. Furthermore, in Genesis 1, we're different. We have a soul. We have a nephesh. We have a spirit. Soul and spirit, same word. We have something that animates us. And you can't mix and mingle that with a computer and say that it's still human. So I think that they're going to run into all kinds of challenges. Yes, it appears that we're going to be putting computer chips into people. I think I was reading about Sweden. They've got computer chips where people can do it for their vaccine passports. That's coming. I can imagine that coming. In fact, I could even join Elon Musk in saying, I'm very glad that you're endeavoring to try to help paraplegics. We could use technology for that, but this is going way past that. This is sprinting past helping humans to replacing humans for the purpose of replacing God. You heard this fellow at the conference. This is about having so much knowledge amassed in one place, replacing morals, getting rid of those old categories of good and evil defined by a computer. Paging Genesis 11, anyone? The Tower of Babel is the old story of this new twist. It was a group of people. Genesis 9:1, God told the people, go fill the land, Shem, Ham, Japheth, the three kids of Noah. Go fill up the territories. And some of them didn't want to go. And we see them in Genesis chapter 11. So they conspire in an effort to not be scattered around the globe. They didn't want to be scattered. They wanted to stay centralized. And so they, with bricks and mortar, because there weren't many stones on the plains, they built a city. They built a tower to reach the heavens. What was the point? To say to God, no, you're not running this. We are. You can summarize the Tower of Babel as man's effort to tell God, you're in our chair. Leave. We're replacing you. Were they successful? The answer to that question is also found in Genesis chapter 11. God, conferring with himself, said, this ain't good. And so I'm going to scatter them. And he did scatter them, and he confused their languages, hence the Tower of Babel, not Babel, the Tower of Babel, because they were all, everybody else was babbling but me. And then you found the person, I speak that same thing, let's go. And so we see from the ancestors of Noah and Shem, Ham, and Japheth, you see basically the three majority people groups on the globe today. You see Caucasian European style folks. You see people who are more brown or yellow skinned, more of the Asian folks. And then you have dark skinned folks. And that all comes from Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Why? because God scattered them, and he confused their languages, and he put up boundaries. Look at all the answers in Genesis. Why do we have boundaries? God drew them. Why do we have different languages? Because God decided to. Why don't we live in a centralized place? Because God has forbidden it, because it was a consequence for man trying to replace God. Do I need to be afraid of this? No, and neither do you. We need to be aware of it. I do believe that we should have Christians that are whip smart engaging in the public forum to talk about the ethics of this, as long as they actually bring their Bibles and not Christian philosophy with them, to talk about the implications of this. And ultimately, as we do, we look to our Bible to recognize human beings are never going to become some sort of cyborg beings. We're human beings. Doesn't get any better. God did not create a robot to glorify himself. He made us. Can they ever have genuine emotions? No, because they're not sentient. And that, too, is another human distinction. We're living beings. And you might be able to modify us to a degree with a computer chip, but you cannot take the life out of us and still call it human. So I don't believe that we have anything to fear in that regard. I don't believe that we have to worry that they're going to be successful and human beings are going to go away. No, that's God's job. He's wrapping up the show. Globalists are not going to put an end to God. God is going to put an end to this earth when he determines it's time to burn up the place and to rebuild it into a new, better place where he dwells with not artificial intelligence, not with robots, but with real people. Would the world like us to be afraid? Yeah, of so many things, including transhumanism. But the Bible tells me, and I hope it tells you, we have nothing to fear but God himself. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.